One of the most controversial decisions the Texans have made in recent memory came in 2014. They had the number one overall pick, and they did not take a quarterback despite needing one until they took Tom Savage in the fourth round. Last week, after Blake Bortles got cut by the Jaguars, the only quarterback left from their original team that picked them in 2014 is Derek Carr. Did the Texans make the right decision ultimately in passing on those quarterbacks?
It's weird to go down this route because, of course, you had to suffer through Ryan Fitzpatrick. You had to suffer through Case Keenum.
Brian Hoyer.
You had to suffer through T.J. Yates, Brian Hoyer, all sorts of quarterbacks Mallett. Along the way. Ryan Mallett, Tom Savage, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, you go back to 2014. Do you really feel good about any of the quarterbacks in that draft class? And you know what? Even though I love Jimmy Garoppolo, I'll include Jimmy Garoppolo in this conversation.
Might have a glass jaw.
Right. We're not sure if this is a guy who can stay on the field. This ACL injury that he suffered is a little different than the one that he got against the Miami Dolphins back when he was filling in for Tom Brady, when he got hit by Kiko Alonso, because that just looked like, wow, he might not be able to take NFL hits because of his frame and because of his size. He's not that big as a quarterback. But, you know, honestly, if you go back to the 2014 draft, yeah, I would have liked the Texans to have drafted a quarterback instead of Xavier Suafilo. But they might have dodged a bullet in not drafting any quarterbacks.
I guess this would be my question, is if they had drafted a quarterback that year, it wouldn't have been Blake Bortles. It would have been Derek Carr or Jimmy Garoppolo.
Or Teddy Bridgewater.
One of those three. I think you can make a case that all three of those guys, you know, it's not like they've been awful. Derek Carr, I don't know how much of Derek Carr could have been improved with better development and consistency. I don't know what he's going to be. But at least you would have figured it out. None of those draft picks are high enough that you couldn't have also drafted Deshaun Watson or Pat Mahomes or wherever you ended up 3 years later. Jimmy Garoppolo, Derek Carr, like none of those are first round picks. It just Teddy Bridgewater would have been a late first round pick. I would have been absolutely fine with any of those guys, and I don't think it would have hampered you, and you would have figured out some things about your team.
That's definitely fair, Seth, but I think the other question is, just given the history of how teams have treated quarterbacks that they consider to be franchise guys, how willing would they be to explore the idea of the unknown when they think that they might have somebody in-house that can be that guy? Because Derek Carr, there were moments where Derek Carr did look like he was going to turn into a very good quarterback.
Right, that's why he got a new deal.
Right, and now you look at Derek Carr and you should think to yourself, I can do better. I don't know that I'll have the opportunity to do better, but you should think that you can do better. And that's the tricky spot. So you're right, Seth. They definitely could have drafted Derek Carr and maybe said to themselves, we're going to go after Deshaun Watson, but I have a hard time seeing them actually pulling the trigger.
Well, right, but here's the counter-argument, though. Because it is a great question by Paul. It's the money question. If the Texans had taken a quarterback in 2014, would they have been willing to go after Deshaun? Minnesota was the team that took Teddy Bridgewater.
Right.
Now, it took an injury, but they were very aggressive in trading for Sam Bradford August.
I'll give you more names. I'll say Paxton Lynch. I'll say Johnny Manziel. I'll say these are first and second round. Geno Smith taken in the second round. People give up on guys that are taken in the first round all the time after just a couple years. So definitely in the second or third round, I think that and then who knows also if maybe Derek Carr would have been further along. Maybe Bill O'Brien does know what he's doing with developing quarterbacks.
Bridgewater seems, though, to be a different circumstance in that his knee just essentially blew up and the Vikings thought to themselves, wow, he might not ever play again, so we're going to go get Sam Bradford and see if we can turn Sam Bradford into something. In the case of Johnny Manziel and Paxton Lynch, all right, we're talking about two dopes. No offense. I mean, we're talking about two guys that just never figured it out.
But you were saying that, okay, well, the Paxton Lynch wasn't a dope like Paxton Lynch wasn't like a dope like Johnny Manziel. Paxton Lynch didn't work out on the football field.
Paxton Lynch bailed on a Gallant at Night interview, and that reflects poorly on his character.
But no, because I was responding to your point where you said that would a team give up on a player who was taken in the draft like that? That's, it's different than being the number one overall pick.
Here's what I mean. Like, take someone like Ryan Tannehill. What if you end up with a quarterback? Like, because Derek Carr, I think, and Ryan Tannehill, there are a lot of quarterbacks that are in that, like, average where I think teams are scared to explore the idea of the unknown. So if you had ended up with a Derek Carr, there's a chance that you might be looking at Derek Carr and saying, we still can squeeze a little bit more out of this. Because the Dolphins did it a couple of times with Ryan Tannehill. Rightly, you know, there are some people who probably could have made a compelling case as to why you could do it with Tannehill. I would personally not have done it. That's what I'm saying, Seth. I'm with you. Yeah, there are a lot of first round quarterbacks that have stunk. There are a lot of second round quarterbacks that teams have decided to pull the plug on. But I think say they had drafted Derek Carr in that spot, or they had drafted Jimmy Garoppolo in that spot, and Garoppolo's dealing with the injury issues that he's been dealing with, or you're just seeing the struggles, the stagnant, no growth from Derek Carr. Are you going to tell yourself going into a draft 2 years ago that, yeah, let's see if we can trade up and get Deshaun Watson? I think a lot of teams would be risk averse to some move like that.
Plus, you still have the whole dynamic with Derek Carr, whether they would have taken him because of his fan base's unwillingness. And I know, like, now all of a sudden, when Derek Carr was doing well, everybody claimed they were telling me that, like, well, of course they should have taken him. It wouldn't have mattered. Meanwhile, when I was arguing for drafting Derek Carr in the second round, all I was getting was feedback from Texans fans saying, no Carr will ever play quarterback in this stinking town again.
You're 100% right.
I feel like there are a whole lot of people waffling on what their actual feelings were at the time.
And now the Derek Carr bandwagon has completely emptied out. You can't even find those people in Houston anymore.
Which bandwagon had more entries and exits, the Derek Carr bandwagon or the Dak Prescott bandwagon?
Oh, I would say Derek Carr, because I still think people like Dak.
Well, no, because before they brought in Amari Cooper, I had Cowboys fans coming at me, telling me, like, no, we never actually liked Dak Prescott that much. You're lying about that. And I'm like, yes, you did. You guys acted like you'd found gold. Like, you guys acted like you had just had stumbled across the best quarterback pick ever. You guys loved Dak Prescott. You were gloating about how awesome Dak Prescott is. Don't sit here and try to tell me, like, no, we're smarter than that in Dallas.
We're discussing the question, looking back on it, now that only one quarterback taken in 2014, did the Texans make the right decision passing on quarterbacks in the 2014 draft other than Tom Savage? I still feel like they did not make the right decision. I would have taken Teddy Bridgewater with the pick that ended up being Suofilo. I would have traded up.
In the moment, I would have taken Bridgewater. Now, again, retroactively, yeah. I would have taken the Italian, Jimmy Garoppolo.
The Texans, I feel like they would probably say something to the effect of, like, this was the plan. They're going to wait, bring in a bunch of different quarterbacks, and then basically make their move for Deshaun Watson. But I think that is not as much the case, because they spent all that money on Brock. It was a disaster for a season. They had to use a second-round pick to get rid of him. And then they were aggressive again. It's not like there was some grand plan. Uh-huh. I just think they got to a point where Bob McNair got so frustrated that he had a really good defense for a couple of years. There was no investment made in a quarterback. So they got desperate for Brock. Wrong decision. They got desperate for Deshaun. Right decision.
Plus, I think, Paul, you're underselling Bill O'Brien's willingness to give up on a quarterback very quickly. So I think that Derek Carr could have easily gotten benched in the first game of his second year as a quarterback. Let's remember the various times that Bill O'Brien has bailed on a quarterback after angrily defending him to everybody else, including his own coaching staff. Remember Bill O'Brien talking to his coaching staff about how these kids can play and he's sick of it and he's tired of how... Remember, how long do those guys last before getting benched?
I wonder, though, if he actually buys into what he has said publicly, that it doesn't matter where you're drafted when it comes to a quarterback.
Oh, I don't believe that at all.
Right, because Fitzpatrick was a replacement-level player that has been on the free agent market a ton of times. Same thing with Brian Hoyer. Ryan Mallett, you got for nothing. Like, I think it's slightly different, but I get where you're coming from.
Mad Takes right now on a Thursday. Something pretty cool is happening very shortly in the National Hockey League. The Kings are going to play the Sharks. This is happening actually tonight, and Will Ferrell is going to call the game as Ron Burgundy tonight.
What in the hell's diversity?
Well, I could be wrong, but I believe diversity is an old, old wooden ship that was used during the Civil War era.
Would you guys be interested, if you happen to be in San Jose and Los Angeles, would you be more likely to tune into a hockey game because Ron Burgundy, the character, is calling this game? This does not feel up a Seth Payne alley.
I'm going to be honest with you. You said it does feel like it?
It does not.
I've been always disappointed when I've seen Ron Burgundy appear as Ron Burgundy in various places. Like, it's a little bit of a letdown. I think Will Ferrell is one of my favorite comedic actors, but I don't know how good of an improv actor he is. Like, a lot of these other guys that are, like, brilliant improv people, I think Bill Murray could do a character in person maybe better than Ron Burgundy. They do have a podcast now that's a Ron Burgundy podcast.
Interesting.
Which I haven't checked out.
When it comes to this character, if you're watching an entire game, an entire hockey game, does it feel like it's going to be too much?
I think 10 minutes I think I would get a couple of chuckles out of it, yeah. And then I'd move on to something else.
I'm wondering, period. With Ron Burgundy, can he get away with doing, like, because these days, when you try to do satire of, like, a typical sexist 70s dude, it's not going to get perceived as satire by, like, the angry 10% of your audience, and you're going to end up with complaints to the... I don't think he can really pull off, like, the true Ron Burgundy character, because people don't get satire anymore. They'll hear Ron Burgundy obviously making fun of, like, 1970s sexism, and they'll flip out, and they'll want to burn down the television station because of it.
You think so?
Yeah. Oh, man. Dude, I've seen so many people get in trouble for obviously satirical statements, like, where they're making fun of racism. But they'll, like, get, people will flip out because, did you see that guy? He was making fun of racists. And like, yeah, I mean, that was the whole point. Yeah, but he shouldn't say that.
Is that
like,
where we're at now?
But isn't he criticizing racism? Yeah, but you shouldn't do it like that. All right, fine.
Well, R. Kelly has been under fire for the documentary that was on television that showed all of the horrible things that he was doing with underage girls. That maybe has gone off to the side with Michael Jackson having a very similar documentary released. But R. Kelly is back after, most recently making headlines, making headway for his visit with Good Morning America on CBS where he lost his mind. He is now singing his daughter happy birthday on Instagram.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear daughter Joanne. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, baby. Daddy, love you. I love you. No matter what, I love you so much. Mwah. Bye. Happy birthday.
Is there a chance that he was saying daughter because he had to kind of like tread water in his mind for a second to remember which daughter he was singing to? I wouldn't blame him if he
why,
did.
Why is R. Kelly in this moment in time on Instagram? That seems like a bad
idea.
Because
he's cloaking himself and his family. It's like he did on the like he did in that interview with Gail King. He was trying to get sympathy by saying, "Hey, I have to. I'm trying to.
I'm a human.
I've got a family here. I've got kids. I have to explain myself to. How could you do this to me? I think that's what he's doing.
Yeah, it's essentially like someone on death row or that's about to get the injection, saying, "But I'm a person. Look at me. I have fond memories."
Yeah, and then everybody else out there is like, "Yeah, I've got a daughter too, R. Kelly, and
I wouldn't want my daughter around you." the thing about it, if you want to check it out, it's on his Instagram. The comment section is. Violent.
Yeah.
Just leave it at that.
Violence. Okay.
Very, very mob and pitchfork and torch-esque.
So Bob Kraft has been offered a plea by the Florida authorities in which he'd have to pay a fine and do some community service. And this is in response to him being caught allegedly with a couple of women giving him services at a massage parlor in Florida.
I think
most of our listeners know about that. He's likely to turn that down. The more interesting part of it from this case is reportedly President Donald Trump wants Kraft to join his players at the White House this spring for the celebration of their Super Bowl victory, a prospect that has White House aides worried that it could turn into an embarrassing media spectacle. What's your personal feeling on this? If you're Bob Kraft, in terms of just being invited, like any of these public appearances at this point, should he lay low until all of this blows over?
Yes.
Or do you just have to own it and be like, what?
No. If I'm Bob Kraft,
go to the White House?
No. If I'm Bob Kraft, I am not appearing in public until all this is gone. I'm not appearing in public until all this goes away.
I think the ultimate move would be like kind of Donald Trump goes to shake his hand as he walks out, but then acts like, "Ooh, I don't know where that hand has been," and pulls his hand away. That'd be a good laugher.
So many thoughts going through my mind right now.
Trump pulled his hand away. I'm not making an anti-Trump joke here. God forbid I do that.
Can't do that.
Yeah.
I mean, why at this point? The owners' meetings are in a week, by the way. So
yeah.
Bill O'Brien is going to have breakfast with the media for an hour next week.
Yeah.
And the owners are all there. Bob Kraft, there's no way Bob Kraft's going to the NFL owners' meetings next week. And if I'm Kraft, I just want all of this to be fully resolved and I can release some statements or do something. But that's at the point where this whole thing is done.
He hasn't been completely shying away from the public eye. I mean, he was at an Oscars party, right? He hasn't done any formal events that we know of. But at some point, like, why not get out there right now? All he has to do is issue the, like, "Look, I can't talk about it. It's an ongoing legal matter." Like, it's a no comment, and then that's all there is to it. Like, is it going to be anybody 3 years from now? You think, like, if he stays away for 3 years and then all of a sudden shows up, people are going to be like, "Oh, yeah, I've totally forgot about that time he got caught with two women in a massage parlor.
I think he wants everything to be resolved before he actually goes back out in the public eye. Will it resolved in the next couple of months?
I don't know in the next couple of months, but he does have, especially when you consider his high-priced lawyers, he's got some pretty convincing legal arguments that, like, at first I heard that he had a defense, and I'm like, ah, whatever. And then you read the defenses, and I think they're going to be – he might be able to wiggle his way out of this one, no pun intended, because he wiggled his way into it, that pun intended.
Hi-oh!
And, he might actually get off on this, no pun intended. But it's really hard not to have puns with any of these things. And he might be found not guilty on this one or have the charges dropped, at which point, yeah, I guess it becomes easier. So he's probably waiting until all of it's resolved.
I think most interestingly is that he – on one hand, is being asked to take a plea deal, but on the other hand, this idea that he doesn't want the video to come out, doesn't that sort of mean that there's some guilt involved here?
No, because part of the argument, the arguments involve whether it was a lawful investigation, whether the traffic stop was lawful, whether it was indeed just him paying for the massage plus a consensual act after that. It depends on how much audio they have. He's not going to try to deny that something happened. He's going to attack the legality of everything surrounding it. And it sounds like they've got four or five valid arguments. And when a billionaire throws his legal resources into four or five valid arguments, I'm guessing that there's a good chance
he had that many valid arguments.
The term I want to use is so bad. There's a term he doesn't get in trouble for this. What's that?
He had that many valid arguments.
Yeah, Mike, I sent you two articles. I outlined them for you on the show prep. I thought you as a law school student might have looked at them at some point in the last 2 weeks.
Charlie Day.
I actually read it. I only thought there was one credible argument, to be honest.
Okay, which one wasn't credible?
Because
for one, there's a question as to whether it was a lawful traffic stop.
Well, that one I thought could have been credible.
There was a question as to whether it was lawful to have the video surveillance.
Yeah, I thought that was valid too. Anything else, I was like, okay, he went into this place. He went in 2 days in a row, so he can't act like this
was
some sort of surprise.
But he's got a long-standing relationship.
Two people he loves.
The people that performed the services for him weren't, like, they were not recent Chinese immigrants or anything.
I agree with that.
Like, one was a licensed therapist, the other was the owner of the salon, so that he could make the argument that he has a prior relationship with these people. If I go in, like, let's say extreme. If my wife is a massage therapist, and I go into her massage therapy place and get a massage from my wife, and maybe I didn't pay for it, because she's a working woman, she deserves the money, I'm not asking for favors. But then after she pays for the services, there's no explicit agreement that we have this. What if it turns out that Bob Kraft has had sexual relations with these women off the
he obviously has.
Like consensual.
Really?
He obviously has. I mean, clearly these are deep relationships that he has with these two people.
Like, unless explicit agreement that, like, hey, I'm gonna give you money for sex, I think that Bob Kraft is gonna be
Hold on. So yeah. Let me get this straight, if I have this correct in my mind. So if I have a sexual relationship with a woman and she happens to work in a massage parlor, I can just go into that massage parlor and it's legal for me to receive services from her?
Massage parlor people have love?
No, you could receive the massage and pay for that, but then she might also on top of it just give you this extra little thing. Now, if I'm the attorney for Bob Kraft, this is what I'm going to say. The prosecutor is going to say, oh, he just gave a $100 tip. And I'm going to be like, oh, that's interesting. I've got about 20 character witnesses right now of people at the golf course, waiters and waitresses, bellboys, all these people, which Bob Kraft has given $100 of tips, and there was nothing sexual involved. This is just what Bob Kraft does. He gives $100 tips.
My final question.
I'm going to go to law school, Mike, and I'm going to prove to you that I know what I'm doing. I'm going to become a specialist in billionaire sex crimes.
My final question is, I mean, have you seen porn scenes that take place at massage parlors? Sometimes you're just getting a massage and you just get horny.
Sometimes the passion's just too much.
It's too much. Look how sexy Bob Kraft is.
The massage therapist is sitting there and she's like, oh my gosh, I've never done this before, but like, you guys, it must be the pheromones or something. I've never felt this way before. And then it just happens.
He's got a tripod, guys.